I desire an interest in your prayers and in your attention. Maybe we could sing the first two verses of number 174. I'd like to put something on the board tonight. Spelling wasn't my best subject, especially when I feel the heat of the moment. I would like to talk to us tonight about temptation, and I desire an interest in your prayers. I don't want it to be too tedious, but I want us to get something out of this that will help us. Because one of the things that I find in life is that there is a temptation that fits every one of us. It doesn't matter how old or young you are. It doesn't matter how long or inexperienced you are at living for God. There's a temptation. There's a temptation that is calibrated to take you out and cause you to fail. And there are many here tonight that have been victorious over multiple temptations, and I'm very grateful for that. But I also want us to realize that many of us have not always been 100% successful when we're faced with temptation. My career has been solving problems, and many times it is an act of patience in recreating some symptoms, and it can be tedious sometimes to resolve issues that are obscure. And so I don't approach this subject as a door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman or anything like that. I'm going to approach it the only way I know how. So I ask that you bear with me in my methods of speaking tonight. And I'd like for us to begin over at a familiar place in the Scripture. It's in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew the 6th chapter. Jesus had a lot of things to say. I believe they were beneficial then, and I believe they're beneficial to us today. We find in the 6th chapter down about the 9th verse, that he gave some advice on how to pray, and he said, you ought to pray after this manner. Not that you should pray these words, but that you should take the pattern and take the content, the subject content, and consider it when you approach the Lord. I'm not going to go into all the details. There's one verse that I want us to look at, and it's verse 13. And Jesus, in his instructions on how to pray, he said, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. I was reading my personal reading time this past week, and it seemed like that verse stood out to me, and as I meditated on it, it seemed like the Lord began to develop this burden, and I desire the Lord to help us be able to convey it tonight in a way that will be effective. First off, it seems like almost that it's portrayed that it's possible that we could be led into temptation by something other than evil forces. But he says here specifically, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. I would say, if you're here tonight, that you have an interest in being delivered from temptation. In fact, I would say that you would like and probably have prayed in times past that temptation would go away, that it wouldn't be there, that it wouldn't be a temptation to you any longer. There's temptations to me because of who I am, of my gender, of my age, of my station in life that somebody else here might not contend with. And you may have a temptation that I don't get. I just don't understand it. There's one for every one of us here tonight. Jesus said his instruction was to pray that the Lord would keep us from temptation. Don't lead us there, and keep us from the evil. And I believe that that's your desire, you wouldn't be here. One of the commentators says this, that the process of temptation is often as follows. A simple evil thought, step one. Step two is a strong imagination or impression made on the imagination by the thing to which we are tempted. Number three, a delight in viewing it. And number four, consent of the will to perform it. Thus, lust is conceived, sin is finished, and death brought forth. So temptation, as a general rule, when we think of temptation, it's not something that overwhelms us with a big impact. It's something that builds. There's a time that it's an enticement. There's a time that it's a novel thing. It's something you didn't know about. I can tell you that there has been times in my life that things that I was completely ignorant and oblivious to, that when I was initially exposed, it was neither temptation or not, it was information. And then as I realized what the context and what the material was, I realized that it had the ability to be a temptation. And you've probably been there too. But if we begin to daydream, to think, to meditate, and cultivate an appetite, that's what we're talking about here tonight, is a temptation. It goes beyond the initial exposure. It's something that starts to whet something in us. You remember, this is not a temptation per se, but you remember how David began to desire a drink of water from the well in Bethel? And how some of his mighty men broke through the enemy ranks and got him that drink of water. He began to think about what it was like. That was a place where he was familiar with. And he began to contemplate and dwell on that to the point that he voiced it. And he said, I sure would like to have a drink of water. I remember how refreshing it was. And temptation is like that. There's something that's presented to you, And then you begin to think, what would it be like to experience that? James, the first chapter, and beginning verse 12, he says, "Blessed is the man that endureth temptation. For when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man." James seems to be of the impression that God wouldn't tempt you. That he can't tempt you. I'm not here to debate that point tonight. I'm here for us to recognize that temptations come from many, many different sources and directions. Don't be surprised when temptation pops out at you, because it's there. There's temptations all around. Just because we're in a place that you don't get cell phone reception, just because we're off the beaten path, doesn't mean that the enemy stopped at the blacktop or down there about where V Highway turned off to come to Myrtle and you lost your cell phone reception. The enemy will present temptations while you're here on this ground. The enemy will see to it that something is interjected into your thought process, maybe into your line of sight. This afternoon, I was in the camper there and asking the Lord, how do I deliver this? And out of the corner of my eye, I saw a mouse run out from underneath my cabinet and run across the floor and went down in my heater duct in the floor. I don't know if I brought him with me or if he come in after I got here. But he's not welcome there, and I would like to trap him, hopefully tonight, but I just don't want him in there. I don't want temptation, but they will pop up. You don't have to. I didn't put a welcome mat out for mice, and I didn't put seeds and crumbles on the floor. We try to sweep it up and all of that kind of thing in the camper, but for some reason he thought it was good to come in. And temptations will present themselves. It doesn't matter where you're at tonight. He says, but every man, this is verse 14, is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and enticed. The temptation is because there's an interest, because it's something that catches your eye. There is something that causes us to look that way. He says, but every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. The death that Adam and Eve experienced in the garden, the spiritual death, the loss of a relationship, a real personal connection with God, it goes away. It sabotages it. How can you have it and have sin in your life too? He says here in verse 16, do not err, my beloved brethren. We got to get it right. We don't have any room for a misunderstanding of what I do with temptation. The devil would like for us to go through life feeling like life is just a sea of temptation, and we can just barely get our head up out of the water a little bit. I'm not a very good swimmer. In fact, I learned to swim coming to Myrtle at work days, and then we'd go swimming in the creek after the work was done. And then when we really felt like we were doing well, we'd go to the 11 Point River. And where we went, it was pretty wide and deep from the time we got in to all the way across. I couldn't touch bottom as a teenager. And I remember one time we went there, a group of us young men, and of course, it was hot summertime, and The river was cold, and we got in there, and as we decided to swim across the river, and I don't know just how far it was, but it was a long ways, especially for me. River's fairly swift. We started swimming across, and one of my companions that I thought was a better swimmer than I got in trouble, and he went under, and I was probably closer to him than anyone else, and I swam over there, and when I got to him, he climbed on me and pushed me under. And the only reason we got to the other side is because I was bigger than him and I had more mass. He'd push me under and I would grab him and throw him, push him as far as I could, and I'd swim to him, and he would crawl on top of me again, and I would push him again. And it wasn't because I knew how to do it, and I flipped him over on his back and drug him by the hair. No, I didn't do any of that. He just climbed on me like a coon on a log. And I got him over a little bit closer to the... I finally got him close enough that I could kind of support him, and we got him out of there. You know, the devil wants to tell you that that's the way temptation is. You're just barely keeping your head out. And every time you get over there, you feel like you got your head up, he climbs on top and pushes you back down again. And you know, the most unfulfilling walk with the Lord is to deal with temptation like that through your whole life. And realize that I'm going along and here's another temptation, and you feel like you're being shoved under the desk, so to speak. There's not much, there was nobody under there tonight, but you feel like you're pushed under the desk with temptation, and you just barely get your head up and go, just almost start paddling again, and here you come again, shoved down underneath again, and you're strangling and sputtering, and you want to live and you want to go and you want to be right with the Lord, and here comes temptation again. Not a very good feeling, is it? We're none of us exempt, so neither was Jesus. I'd like to go to Matthew, the 4th chapter. But we notice in the 3rd chapter of Matthew, there's an account of Jesus being baptized by John. And John got a vision of the heavens opening and the Spirit of God coming down and the voice of God saying, "This is my well-beloved Son, in whom I'm well pleased." And the first verse of the 4th chapter says, "Then was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil." One commentator says this, that after... it pretty much happens the same way with us. When we have one of those times that we have the clearest light and the strongest consolation and conviction, and we get in a setting like this and feel the blessings of the Lord because of a song that was sung and the presence of others and all of that, and go back home, and guess what hits us right in the face? Temptation. Many times we can, right after the time of the most clearest witness that you're my child and I love you, and we feel that we're out on top and we're being able to paddle for ourselves a little bit, then comes some of the sharpest temptations in our life. Temptations to maybe give up, which would seem absurd maybe a few hours before or a day before. A temptation to do something that you know is not pleasing to the Lord. So I want you to know, because Jesus was tempted, and because He loves us, because He's willing to die for us, that He's touched with that. I'd like to go to Hebrews, the 4th chapter, and just read it for you. Hebrews chapter 4. And you all know this verse, I'm sure, maybe even better than me. It says in verse 14, chapter 4, it says, "Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession." Holding fast the profession means that you willingly recognize that you have something worth fighting for. He says, "Let us hold fast our profession, for we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities." That may bother you because you may be more grammatically correct than I am, but I really like it the way it's said. There is an extra emphasis on the fact that Jesus is touched with our troubles. He's touched with our infirmities when it's physical, when it is emotional and you're despondent and grieving and discouraged and all of that just because of the circumstances and your station in life. But that's not all. It says, "But was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin." Jesus has empathy for your state of temptation. He's touched with that. He knows what it feels like to be tempted. I really am not here with the capability or even remotely prepared to tell you how Jesus was tempted, because He was here when the whole world was created. So how could it have been tempting to Him for Satan to offer Him something that belonged to this earth? It seems absurd. But there was something there, otherwise the Scripture wouldn't have said that He was tempted. I don't know why some things are a temptation to you that might not be a temptation to someone else, but I want you to know that Jesus knows and He understands. And He don't just know and understand, He wants to help us with it. He says in verse 16, "Let us therefore consequently or because of or in light of that He is touched with the feelings of our infirmities," because He was tempted in all points. It says, "Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need." So I want to tell us that tonight, whether tonight is the night or whenever it is that you feel temptation pressing in, that He's touched and you are authorized, you are allowed, you are commissioned, you're whatever you want, the privilege to come boldly and seek His help. "Lord, I need some help right here. This is just a temptation. This is something that is causing me to begin to think on something more than I ought to think on it. This is something that I realize if I allow it to mature and develop, it'll take me someplace that I shouldn't go." So He's touched with our feelings, with our temptation. I'd like to talk to us now. My purpose up to this point has been to try to identify a temptation. Not because I can tell you what they all are, but that we would recognize what a temptation is. Expectations. What's our expectation? You know, some of the things that you can avoid a lot of problems if you set the expectation in the beginning. If you hire somebody to work for you, if you just assume that they know what they ought to do, you set yourself up for disaster. You have to set an expectation. Somebody says, "I'll help." Then set an expectation. Don't tell them, just come along. Tell them, "Look, to be a help, this is what you need to do. You need to be able to lift 50 pounds. I don't know, whatever it is. You need to be able to swing a sledgehammer. You need to be able to, if you don't know which end of the nail goes in the board first, then that's not a help." But you set an expectation. So I'm going to set an expectation. Let's go to 1 Peter, the second chapter, and begin reading in the 19th verse. 1 Peter 2:19. He says, "For this is thankworthy, if a man, for conscience' sake, conscience toward God, endure grief, suffering wrongfully. For what glory is it, if we be buffeted for your faults, ye shall take it patiently. But if, when you do well and suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. But even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow His steps." All right, so here's the expectation. "Who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth. When he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judges righteously." So that's an expectation. He was a what? An example that we should ye should follow his steps. Didn't it say he was tempted in all points like we are, yet without succumbing to the temptation? Can I say it like that? That's the expectation. Why would you set an expectation to fail? Doesn't seem very right, does it? So we want to set an expectation to succeed, to be successful. Young people, I was in your seat one day. It seems like it wasn't that long ago. I know what it's like to face a young person's temptations, a young man's temptations. I know what that feels like. I know what it's like to get my head shoved underwater. But I also know what it's like to make it to the other side of the river. So I want to set an expectation for you tonight. Temptation's going to be there. It's a given. But you don't have to fall prey to it. You can rise above it. That's the expectation. And in Matthew, the 12th chapter, I would like to turn there and begin reading in verse 43. And notice some words of Jesus here again. Matthew chapter 12, beginning verse 43. He says, "When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest, and finding none. Then he saith, I will return into my house from whence I came out. And when he is come, he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished. Then goeth he and taketh with him seven other spirits, more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. Even so shall it be also unto this wicked generation." Now I would like for us to take a part of this little passage and look at it a little closer. He said in verse 44, "I will return," he's talking about an evil spirit here, an unclean spirit, and that unclean spirit is still alive and well in our world today, if you didn't know that. And he said, "I will return into my house from which I came out, and when he has come, he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished." I don't believe that I'm speaking to a majority sinner crowd tonight. I believe I'm speaking to a congregation here that has intentions of making it to heaven. And I would say, by and large, I'm speaking to those that would say, "I believe I'm saved." But you know, and I know, we deal with temptations. And when you're saved, you've quit the sin business, right? You've stepped aside from all of those wicked habits. I don't know what you did. I don't know what the Lord convicted you of, but when He convicted you and you repented, you quit that. You cleaned it out. It says, this spirit came back and he found it empty. The rubbish had been hauled out. The evil, wicked habits had been stopped. And then he said he found it swept. Bad attitudes, been working on those? I hope you have. Desires and ambitions, have you been trying to align those with what God would have you to do? I hope you have. I hope that you've been sincerely asking God, Lord, what do you want out of me in my life? How can I be most like you? How can I be of most benefit to the kingdom? I hope you've been doing that. That's sweeping out some cobwebs and taking some dust out of the corners and garnished. I'm kind of a meat and potatoes type guy. Garnished. Does parsley have any flavor? They sprinkle it on stuff for what? Garnishing. They try to make it look attractive. I mean, mashed potatoes look pretty good to me, but if you want to sprinkle some parsley on, I'll still eat them. But garnished. What did this unclean spirit, what might he find if he comes back to find a person that's intent on living for God? Well, what kind of garnishing does the Lord give us? Let's go to Psalms 149:4. And notice what he said over there. Psalms 149:4. He says something here that I feel is important to us. He says, if I can get to it, for the Lord taketh pleasure in his people. He will beautify the meek with salvation. And over there in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter in the 4th verse, he talks about adornments there, doesn't he? And he says, but let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and a quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God a great price. That's a garnishment, isn't it? It's something that's attractive. It makes the way attractive. It's hard to pick a fight with someone that's meek, that's kind, that's gentle. You know, an unclean spirit that has been booted out of a life, if he comes back around and he sees a meek and a quiet spirit, did you know he'll try to crowd right in there? He'll try to offer temptation. He'll try to get your attention and attract you and cause you to fail and lose what you got. Lord, help us here. The expectation is that we keep the meek and a quiet spirit, that we keep it swept, we keep it garnished, we keep it in a way that is pleasing to the Lord. So now I want us to talk about the most important part. You know, sometimes it's easy just to identify a problem, but the most important thing is, what are we going to do to fix it? I've identified problems a lot of times and somebody was not willing to pay the price to fix it. I had one just recently, came in on the hook and raised this truck up in the air and looked up and there was a piece of the engine that had made a window in the side and it was sticking out. But when it came right down to it, didn't want to pay. Cost a lot of money to fix those kind of problems. Many times we find ourselves in that place spiritually. We don't like getting our head shoved under the water. We don't like the effect of temptation. We would like to be out on top. We would like temptations to vaporize, to be gone. I'll just give y'all a little hint. When you're young and adolescent and teenager and you think, man, it'd be nice to be old and I wouldn't have to deal with the temptations of youth, there's a different set when you get older. There's a different set of temptations. And now, maybe when you get old, you wish that you could be young again because you think you know how to handle those. I don't know that we'd do any better the second time around, but temptations are just real. So how do we work with them? What's our tools? I like tools. I had a torque wrench fail me just recently. And I had bought it, I believe, in 1988 or 1989. The tool representative come by. He'd been trying to get me to buy a new one. I said, I'm not buying one as long as this one's working. Had a knurled handle. Some of y'all know what that means. And I've used it so much that my hands have wore the knurling completely off. It's smooth now. So I've had a hold of that a lot of times in the last 34 years. And it quit me last week. So I've had to get another one. I want a tool like that. I want a tool that works every time. And I want you, that's what I want to do here tonight with the help of the Lord, is I want to give you something that will work. Because I know temptation will come. Temptation is here. You've probably faced temptation in some form or another since you've been here. I don't know what it is, and you don't have to tell me, but I know that temptation is lurking around just like that mouse that I hope is on the sticky pad by now. I put two of them out. And I hope I get him. But I want us to be able to have something that works. Something that you can reach in your spiritual toolbox and pull out and say, this will get a result. So I want to look at one of those. I want to look to Romans, the 12th chapter, and the 21st verse. The 12th chapter is one that's very special to me. But in the last verse it says, be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. Okay, so be not overcome of evil. I can tell you that and you can go away and be warmed and filled, so to speak. But remember, it's an evil, unclean spirit that's coming back wanting to infiltrate something that's been cleaned, swept, and garnished. It's the evil temptation that wants to infiltrate your mind with thoughts and ideas and suggestions and opportunities to fall prey and to die spiritually. And one of the antidotes, one of the tools that will work is to fill yourself with good. It says here, be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. I was raised with a lot of old adages and things that probably come from less than perfectly educated people, but one of the things I was taught as a young man was, idle hands are a devil's workshop. Or idle minds, either one of those. It's good to keep our minds and our hands busy. Not just busy, but something that's constructive. There are many things that you can do that's good for others, maybe even good for yourself, rather than idly doing mindless activities. We have an epidemic in our world today of mindless activities. I despise these little games. I'm not trying to hit anybody over the head. get up and do something. Feel, you want to try to reverse the effect of temptation in your life. You want a tool that will work? Don't allow yourself to get down and distracted and jumping from one thing to something else on your phone. Don't be playing those little games that really don't help. You probably got something that you ought to be doing. I can't help everybody, but I might help a few of you in giving you something to do. But I'm going to tell you, be not overcome. You want a tool that will work and crowd out temptation? Be not overcome of evil. Don't allow temptation the time of day. You ever heard that expression? Don't let temptation have any time of your day. Find something to do. You got a lot of energy, you can get a lot done. Don't let your energy of youth be wasted. If you're someone that doesn't require a lot of sleep, I've been one of those all of my life, then don't try to cultivate laying in bed. Get up and do something. Let's get going. It's a tool that will have an effect. If you don't choose to use it, you will be more susceptible to fall and prey to what the temptation has to offer. That's just one tool. All right? I'd like to go to Proverbs, the fourth chapter, and look in the 11th verse beginning. We used to read a lot of Proverbs in family worship. And if you've got a family, I would recommend that you read a lot of Proverbs. The fourth chapter, there's a lot of these verses. I had four sons at the house, and so there's a lot of these that are custom tailored for sons. Begins out like something like, "My son, forget not my law." And the fourth chapter starts, "Hear ye children the instruction of a father, and attend to know understanding. I'd like to go down to verse 11. Begin there. It says, "I have taught thee." This is talking about a father, what he's taught a child. He says, "I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I have led thee in right paths. When thou goest, thy steps shall not be straitened." That means it doesn't become difficult or too narrow. He says, "And when thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble." Use your abilities to their potential. If you set long enough, you'll get to where you can't walk. Just remember that. "Take fast hold of instruction, let her not go. Keep her, for she is thy life. Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it, pass not by it, and turn from it, and pass away." Now, I'm going to pass something on to you that I was told as a young man. My mother told me that if you run with the wrong crowd and they get in trouble, you'll be in trouble too. And the other thing that she always backed that up with, if you ever get in jail, I want you to call me, but I'm not bailing you out. It didn't matter. I'm not bailing you out. So, consequently, she told me that so long, I believed her. I never got in jail, and I always thought about the companions and the friends that I chose. So, take this as a tool. You want to avoid temptation. You want temptation to have minimal effect in your life. Enter not in the path of the wicked. Go not in the way of evil men. Stay away. There's places you just stay away from. Whether it's on the internet, or whether it's down at the end of the street, or in the back of the store, or wherever it is. It says, this is plain and simple, enter not into the path of the wicked. You want to undermine temptation. There's been something working right over here. Y'all notice that? There's a pile of rocks out there, and I'm pretty sure Brother Harlan didn't do that. But there's something been getting under the slab and dragging the rocks out. I'm pretty sure it's hollow under there. You want to undermine temptation? Don't go down there where the wickedness is. Stay away from that. Use that tool every day. Don't drive by and look all the way till you can't see it anymore. Don't do that. I'm talking to me and I'm talking to you. You want to be successful? You want a tool that'll work? Don't go down there. Avoid it. Pass not by it, it says. Turn from it and pass away. Because they sleep not, except they have done mischief, and their sleep is taken away unless they cause some to fall. You know that the purpose of wickedness is that they would cause somebody to fall. They just keep throwing that out. I got in a real brief conversation about fishing, and I'm not a fisherman. I just know you're presenting the bait over and over again many times. And if you keep doing it, most of you will catch a fish. I don't know that I would, but most of you will. And the devil just keeps presenting it constantly in a little different manner. Sometimes he reels it in slow. Sometimes it's fast. Sometimes he makes it bounce off the boat. You get the message. The devil is constantly presenting something, and he don't stop because he's going to snag something. He might snag you. Don't put yourself in a place that he's reeling his bait around. Stay away from the bait. It says, for they eat the bread of wickedness, and they drink the wine of violence. Verse 18, but the path of the just is as a shining light that shineth more and more into a perfect day. The way of the wicked is as darkness, they know not at what they stumble. My son, dear ones, tonight, please listen to what I'm trying to say. He says, let them not depart from thine eyes. Keep them in the midst of thine heart, for they are life unto those that find them and health to their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. There could be a whole message speaks on that. He says, put away from thee a froward mouth, one that's just constantly looking for ways to trip somebody else up, that's looking for ways to contest truth. You can go away and criticize me and how I've presented this message tonight. That's between you and the Lord, and you know the enemy would take that very thing and try to destroy your soul. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or anything like that. I'm just telling you that's a reality. It can be a temptation to be froward in your mouth. He says here, put away from thee a froward mouth and perverse lips put far from thee. Let thine eyes look right on and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of the feet. Think about what you're doing. Think about where you're going. Let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. This page is pretty worn in my Bible. It's because it's my reference. It's like my old torque wrench that I wore the knurling completely off of the handle. I've turned to this many times, reminding myself, don't look to the right, don't look to the left. Keep thine eyelids looking right on. It's a tool that'll help you when temptation comes along. Proverbs, the first chapter, and the 8th verse beginning. He says, my son, again, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be a what? An ornament of grace. This is one of those things that ought to be on that vessel that's been cleaned out, that's been swept. An ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck. It's something that would identify you as a child of God. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come, it won't hurt. Just go with us. It'll be fun. Have you ever done this before? Then how do you know? If sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Use it. Don't be afraid to use it. Don't hesitate to use it. We're trying to build up strength. We're trying to build up the ability to avoid temptation, to undermine it, to destroy it. I'd love to pray it away, but I've never successfully prayed temptation away for myself or anyone else. I have succeeded in defeating temptation. And I believe by the grace of God, you can too. We need some tools and we need some desire. If sinners entice thee, consent thou not. You want some more details? Turn to Genesis, the 39th chapter, and read verses 7 through 12. I'm not going to read it here because if I elaborated it on it very much, it might not be the best or most appropriate. Joseph was presented. That's the story. Joseph was presented with a temptation, and he consented not. He used this tool. The temptation was there. He did not fail. Jesus was presented with temptation. He did not fail. The expectation for us tonight is when temptation comes, we're able to deflect it. Not consent. Don't go in the way of the sinners. Put good things in our life. Crowd out the evil. I've told many people this. I'll tell you tonight, and if you've heard me before, bear with me. I think my brain, and probably yours is too, is like a straw. We keep poking stuff in one end. Pretty soon something's going to come out the other end. Right? You keep your straw full of good things. Keep your mind full of good things. And there's no room for evil things to be in there. But if you blow all your good stuff out, might be a spider in there. It might be something else that comes in. Some evil thoughts might have a place to land. I don't want evil thoughts to have a room to land. That means I have to apply myself. That's why it's so important. You hear a preacher say, you ought to read your Bible. You ought to pray. Well, why? Keep your straw full of good stuff. Don't give it room for some evil thing to be able to have room to even settle in. Keep it full of good stuff. Don't go in the way of sinners. If they entice you, don't consent. Joseph didn't. Isaiah, the 28th chapter. Isaiah lived in a time that he prophesied about the kingdom of Israel being carried off in captivity because they failed God. And he lived to see it happen. Isaiah chapter 28. He's talking to a specific tribe there. And he's lamenting their lack of integrity and their lack of ability. He says in verse 9, chapter 28 of Isaiah, he says, whom shall he teach knowledge, and whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breast, but precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept. You know how any of us learn anything? It's because we accumulate understanding. You know how you're going to learn how to detect and overcome temptation? It's because you apply yourself. If you feel like you just wake up and temptation has overwhelmed you, I'm going to tell you you're not being perceptive enough. The Lord can help you to pay closer attention. Precept upon precept. Begin to look back. How did this happen? Special tactical forces have something they call a AAR, after action report. They go back and look at what happened, and they begin to talk about what went right and what went wrong. And what could we do to avoid a bad situation in the future? They say, this is what they tell one another. We don't want to rely on luck. I don't want you to just luckily not fall to temptation. I want you to if you fail to a temptation, ask yourself, why did I fall? Did I have an empty space in my straw? Did I fail and I went down the path where the wicked people are or the wicked devices are? When I was enticed, did I listen a little while or did I just say no? Where did I fail? You know, the Lord Jesus has empathy for you wherever you are tonight. And He don't want you to fail. He wants you to succeed. For whatever it's worth, I want you to succeed. I want you to be victorious. I want you to want to come back. I want you to get something that's meaningful, that will help you in your walk with the Lord. I'm not here for my health. Precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Lord, help us to realize temptation can be overcome with the help of the Lord. It's only by His grace. But, you know, this building was built with tools too. I was here when the building was being put up. And the lights and the wires and all of those kind of things. I don't remember if I was here on the day that the actual building was put up, but I was here helping put lights and wires up. I remember that. I was pretty young. And they all used tools. I didn't see one nail go in with a fist. I didn't see any of that. They used tools. The Lord wants you to use some tools. He wants you to think about what you're doing. Don't go down the path where the wickedness is. Don't see how close you can get to the edge before you fall off. All right? Be like Jacob. You remember that wrestling match? Angel said, "You got to let me go. The day's breaking." Jacob said, "I won't let you go until you bless me. Except you bless me. That's the only way. Lord, I want victory over this. If I deal with this temptation over and over and over again, if I don't learn anything else, I want to be victorious here. Lord, how do I avoid this temptation? How do I get above this thing? I don't want to be like shoved underwater all the time. I want to be able to say, devil, they don't work here anymore. I'm not interested in your sales pitch. I don't want your vacuum cleaner anymore. I want to be right with God. I want to put this episode down as victory in my life." Job said, "Though he slay me, yet will I serve him." We've got to have some passion. I'm not giving up. Job was ultimately tempted to give up the Lord, wasn't he? You know, that's our ultimate temptation too, is to give up the Lord. You may be tempted to do something that would cause you to feel guilty, but ultimately you're tempted to just throw the whole thing overboard. That's what the ultimate temptation is. But there's a victory. I'd like to end with a verse in 1 John, the second chapter. Thank you for being patient with me tonight. 1 John, the second chapter, the 13th verse. He says, "I write unto you, fathers, because you have known Him that is from the beginning." That's God. "I write unto you, young men, because you have overcome the wicked one." You know, John was writing because he knew that there was some that had been successful in resisting temptation. "You've overcome the wicked one. I write unto you, little children, because ye have known the Father." Now listen to this verse. "I have written unto you, fathers, because ye have known Him that is from the beginning. I have written unto you, young men, because you are strong, and the word of God abideth you, and you have overcome the wicked one." Now, is it important to overcome the wicked one or not? He said it twice. That's the expectation. But keep reading here. He says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. We want to be successful? Where's our love? Where is it focused on? He says, and the world passeth away in the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. That's victory. That's success. I trust that you'll take the simple tools that I've tried to present to you tonight. Keep your mind full of good things. Don't go in the path of the wicked. If somebody or something entices you, be like Joseph. Remember? You think you got it bad. What about Joseph? You think Joseph could have got by with that? For a little while he would have. Until the devil got tired of him, and then he'd have still exposed him. You can be successful. I want you to believe that. You can be successful because God wants you to be. Jesus wants to be. He is touched with the feelings of your infirmities. He's been touched with your temptations. He wants you to be successful. He wants you to get that tool out and use it again. Lord, I don't want this thought in my head. Help me to put something in to crowd it out. I'm not talking about psychology here. I'm talking about asking God to help you know how to fill your head with something that's good and something that's profitable. I want you to be successful. I want us all to see each other on the other side. That'll be quite a day, won't it? You pray for me.